From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us tonight and listening to the show. I got to tell you, honestly, sincerely, it is a pleasure to do this show for you guys every single night. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. It doesn't matter what's going on in personal lives. We get to come in here every single day. We get to talk about the news with you guys, stories, not just the news, but just like stories that we find entertaining, things that we find amusing or funny. If you guys ever have any suggestions on this, you are more than welcome to send them to us on the text line 888-973-5476. We try to get to as many of those texts as we can. We certainly see everything that comes in, even if we can't respond to every single one of them. The other way that you can get in touch with us is on Facebook. You can get us on the Cairo Nights Facebook page. You can try to send me some DMs on my Instagram page, at JakeSkorheim1, where I post videos every single day, which are a lot of fun. You can email us. There's all different various ways you can get to us. And then we know what you guys want to talk about. So it's really great. We really appreciate it. And you guys have really great suggestions too, by the way. I'm not just kissing your rear ends here. We do get a lot of stories from our listeners. So thank you guys for that. All right. So now I want to get into the news roundup. If you are new to the show, welcome. Thank you guys so much for listening. The news roundup is a little segment that we do every night. We like to look back and see what all the other shows are talking about because they're very different. Like our show is very different than Seattle's Morning News. We're the nighttime, prime time, chilled out, everybody's having a good time show. Seattle's Morning News, very cool for different reasons. They're going to give you up-to-date news on topics that you might need to know as you get your day started. G and Ursula, Jack and Spike, John and Sherry, all these people have very different ways that they view the world. And so we like to check in, find out what they're talking about, and then we get a chance to also chit-chat about those things. So on Seattle's Morning News, Mickey Gomez was talking about some of the most amazing places to live in the United States as ranked by Money Magazine. Let's hear about it. Do we have any here locally? Let's hear about it.
What they're saying in Clark County and another, and then in Eugene, Oregon, that it's two of the most amazing places to live in the United States. Now, I've been to neither area, so I can't attest to this, but I will tell you that the Times says that it's not just college town, that there's a lot of art, there's beauty, there's community, there's social gathering. I love that Sully is just nodding his head and going, yes, yes, and yes. And those are the kinds of places that I want to visit and travel. So I'm really excited that two of the best places to live in the United States are right here in the Pacific North.
I got to pause it there real fast because I have a thought on this. People always talk about local art scenes. I'm not trying to take away from local artists. I find it fascinating what you guys do. You guys are great sometimes. A lot of times, though, I look at it and I go, like, why is a person spending their time doing this? Like, local art. When's the last... this is an honest question for you, and you might have very strong feelings about this, in which case I recommend that you reach out to me on one of these various platforms and share your thoughts with me, because nothing would make me feel better. When I go and visit somewhere with my family, when I'm going someplace, or even when I'm just by myself, if I'm in like a city traveling for work or something, when's the last time you went like online ahead of time? Let's say you're going down to Austin. You got to fly down to Austin for some reason. Or you're going to Nashville. Or these are all, you know, like cowboy towns. But like, let's say you're going to New York. When's the last time that you went ahead and got online and went like, all right, what local art can I go see when I'm in Nashville? Isn't it normally like restaurants? That's what I'm looking for. When I think about where I'm going to go and visit in the United States, and maybe that's because I'm at the age I'm at. I'm at a time in life where I really enjoy eating, which is ridiculous. I really like food right now. I'm loving it. I'm loving eating right now. I take so much joy in a slow meal. Do you guys do this? It drives my wife nuts because she just eats differently than I do. Probably because, you know, we've got young kids and she's a better parent than I am. So she knows that she's got to like deal with kids. I sit down and I can take 2 hours to eat what a normal person would consume in 30 minutes because I luxuriate in the experience of eating. I love it. I love sitting down course by course. I'm not eating like a bunch of multiple course meals. Normally it all fits on one plate. But when I do get the opportunity to sit down, especially in a restaurant and have multiple courses and eat slow, there's nothing in life that I enjoy doing more. I can think of a couple things, but I'm not going to talk about them on this family-friendly show. But what I really love to do is I love to sit down at a restaurant and I love to eat slowly. So when I'm thinking about places that I want to go in the United States, the places that I would be visiting most probably would have something to do with the local cuisine and less to do with the local art. But that's just me. I might be different than you, and that's all right.
West, and I'll be the first to say my daughter does want to go to Eugene for college.
Okay.
That's what she's eyeballing.
Travel south to be in your future.
Try to not be too upset as a Husky.
It's beautiful.
I know.
That town is beautiful in the fall.
That's what I hear.
In the fall, that town is beautiful. And there's a lot going on down in Eugene. Now, Camas. I will too, but I'm just kind of trying to think about it. Because, I mean, I love Camas. I have lots of friends that are from Camas. I mean, I love playing the golf course in Camas. There's a lot kind of going, a lot of kind of land and stuff out there, but I've never kind of really been in and around because I usually end up back in Vancouver instead of doing, but I mean, it's beautiful, but I don't know as much about the amenities there as I do Eugene.
And I've been to Vancouver as well. We go to Portland a lot because we have basketball tournaments. I love seeing, you know, Mount Hood. I mean, all of that is just beautiful, but I think I've driven through Camas, but I've never really been there.
I can't say that I've ever been to Camas. I'm sure I have. I've been everywhere, man. Like, what's that old Johnny Cash song? I like to go to places with good food. That's what I like. I like good food. All right, on G and Ursula, Mike Lewis was in for Ursula, and they were talking about AI being used to grade homework.
Did you like essay tests in high school and college?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, those were my favorite. I hated multiple choice. I don't know why. They just gave me anxiety, but I loved it. It was like, okay, if it's going to be an essay test, I love it. But now, apparently, AI is being used in...
I'm going to pause it here real fast because I already have a thought on this. I also loved essay tests. And the reason why I loved essay tests is because, unlike multiple choice, there is no wrong answer on an essay test. And I learned this. I studied literature in college. I had to write a lot of papers. And the thing about writing that you discover when you do a lot of it is... you cannot be wrong. Whatever your thoughts are on it, if you can express it in the way that they want it expressed, not the idea, like they can't tell you to have a specific idea, but they can't fault you if you are writing a good paper. You can be saying, you know, you can, whatever. Like, there's just no wrong answer, which is great. So, yeah, I also like the essays.
In terms of grading a lot of these essays. And so we were wondering, like, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? The plagiarism detection platform Turnitin released a study that found half of college students used AI tools in fall of 2023, with 22% of faculty members also reporting the same. And I guess the question would be, is that a good thing? Do you have any issues with the use of artificial intelligence when it comes to grading essays?
No, not really. I mean, I don't have any problems with students using AI at all. The students were using AI. They're just using more rudimentary forms of it. I mean, that's, you know, you can take Google search algorithms as a form of AI. And then now we've moved on to much more complete narrative forms of this in large language models. But there's been that. So if you're doing research through, if AI is compiling all the best and you're asking AI for citations, which you can do, if you make a query to AI and say, cite your information, ChatGPT will do that. And you can actually see the original source information for that. So if students are using it, I don't have any problems with it. It's the overuse of it, or the use of it in lieu of your own work is the problem.
Have you guys heard of the term Luddite? You know what Luddite is? For anybody who's out there who doesn't know, it's basically like somebody who is opposed to technological change. That would be the most accurate definition that I can think of. Maybe not historically. I bet you originally you could like trace it way back and Luddite means something different. But in today's day and age, Luddite describes somebody who's almost afraid of the change in technology. Would I describe myself as a Luddite? No. But I would say that there are a lot of things about a Luddite that are positive. Like, to be honest, there's a lot of things about AI that kind of make me uncomfortable. There's a lot of things about social media and about all of the way that technology has slowly become kind of like, almost like it's just intertwining in our lives, where it's indistinguishable. Your life is indistinguishable from technology now. Think about how much time you are spending looking at your phone, looking at your computer, talking to Alexa in your kitchen, like I do when I need anything. I'll do Alexa, what's the weather going to be like? Alexa, what's the recipe for orange chicken? Whatever it might be. you're constantly going to this well, which is an unending resource. So you become so dependent on it. So there's just something about that, that humanity, it didn't used to have those access to those things. And is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Ultimately, on a long enough timeline, that will be revealed to us. Right now, it doesn't feel like a great thing to me. So this question about AI being used to grade essays, this seems like kind of like a very simplistic thing. Maybe it's not bad on its face. Maybe AI being used to grade essays, not a bad deal. Although, if a kid uses AI, I know a lot of schools are saying, hey, we don't want kids using AI. We don't want college students using AI. I don't know if I want a teacher using AI. Like, I feel like we're holding kids and students, students and teachers to different standards. Are teachers allowed to use AI? I don't like it if a kid can't use it. And I don't like a kid using it. So maybe I don't like teachers using it either. But there is just something about AI. There's just something about it just like kind of rubs me the wrong way. I can't even put a finger on what about it I don't like. I just don't know if I like it. So maybe I am a Luddite. All right. Jack and Spike, they were talking about... left on read and how to, what is this? Leave on read. This doesn't make sense. Let's hear them describe it.
At a certain point in time, we said, did Frank Shires get the text messages for the stories that we want to talk about? And Laura, you said what about Frank's text messages?
That he reads them immediately. And I know this because it tells me.
Okay. They're talking about, you know, when you send text messages to people, that little icon at the bottom, it can say like delivered, or it might even say read. So it lets you know when somebody reads it. I think that's what they're talking about here.
The second I send Frank a text, read.
Now, Spike then said,
how do you know you read it? Earnestly. Literally, I have no idea. I mean, my phone, I could show you every texter I got. Nobody ever says.
So on your phone.
Yeah.
You can program a thing in that says show when someone has read my text message or allow someone else to see when someone has read my text message. Does that make sense?
And they would know when I have read theirs.
Right.
Conversely, right?
Now, yeah. If you have good, healthy boundaries, you turn that off. You don't have it on. Because the whole read option on an iPhone or on a Samsung or whatever it is, mm-hmm. is weirdly invasive. You don't want to have...
I'm going to pause it real fast. We'll get back to the clip here in just a second. I got to say, I agree with Jack on this one. I find it odd that I need to know, like, why does Apple, like, I have an iPhone, I'm sure Android also offers something similar, but why is it that Apple is telling me that somebody has read something that I have sent? Isn't that, like, if I send my wife a text message, I assume at some point she's going to look at her phone and then she's going to read it. I just assume that's what's going to happen. Why do I need to see in real time that they are reading it? Because then there's this extra thing that like kicks in. And I wonder if this is the reason that they put this in there. If there is a notification system where somebody knows that somebody else has read a text, like for instance, if somebody sends me a text message, in the old days, I could read it, I could think about it, I could formulate my response, or I could not respond for a long time. Now, if I know that somebody is able to see in real time that I have read that message, now I am aware that they are waiting for my response. And if they're waiting for my response, now I feel like a pressure to be looking at my phone to make sure that I give the response in a timely manner because they're expecting it because I don't want to offend them, that I'm not responding to a text that they just sent me. Where like in the old days, people don't even remember this. This is crazy about technology. People may not even remember this, but in the very old days, you would call somebody up on the telephone. If they weren't at their house, you would leave a message on a machine that physically taped your voice and would physically tape your voice. They would just hear it when they heard it and they'd get back to you when they felt like getting back to you. There was no like onus or pressure on the person who received the message to respond in a timely manner. You put the message out there. Now you're waiting. Now the ball's in their court. But with this app, with this updated app that tells you, oh, somebody has read your message and now they're not responding. I feel like it's all just trying to pressure you into doing something, which is to respond to the text. I might be overthinking that, but I think that's what they're trying to do here. Let's see if Jack and Spike get to the bottom of it.
Have it on. Some people leave it on. I have no idea why they do that. But if you see that, if you get left on read, generally a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is a passive aggressive response. Laura, correct?
Yes.
Like if I
read it, but I don't care enough to respond to
yes,
it right now.
Yeah, and it can be absolutely devastating. You go down an emotional rabbit hole, right? You start spinning. It's the worst feeling in the world. It's kind of like when your boss chews you out right before you go on air.
Yeah, it's how you start, recover from that.
You just start feeling really bad about yourself.
Uh-huh.
And you go, yeah. Well, maybe my entire career is falling apart. And maybe I'm not doing so. Why isn't this person reading my text message? Why isn't... It's a thing that happens to people, which is why I don't want to put people through that torture. So I turn it off.
Yeah, it's a weird technology. I don't like it. All right, John and Sherry, they were talking about a new food app that can actually help you lower your food. I like anything that saves you money, anything that saves me money, I want to highlight. Food is expensive. It's crazy expensive these days. So anything that helps you and your family not have to pay as much, I like. Let's hear about it.
You go to this app called Too Good uh-huh. to Go, and you uh-huh. find and rescue unwanted food from eateries and grocery stores. So uh-huh. it's like he gives this example of an Italian restaurant. They post it on the app, and then whoever gets yeah. there first gets it. So he got a 9x11 sheet of lasagna, focaccia bread, salad, and more stuff for $12. Uh-huh. Oh. So this thing was founded in Denmark, and it's available now in 27 states. They have 92 uh-huh. million users. So there's another thing called Flash Food, and those things don't always expire. I guess that's the question, is how fresh is the food they're about to throw away that they'll give to mm-hmm. you?
Well, if they're about to throw it away, that means they don't want it anymore. There's probably a time where you can that's still good, right? You just, I would say you just scrape off the stuff you don't want, like hair.
What, like the mold?
Mold.
Mildew.
Bugs, maybe a baby rat. They're easier to scrape off.
Human tooth.
Having, I don't know about that.
This is weird that this app actually like tells you, because I would then wonder, is this like, I'm trying to understand this. Does it mean that the food that somebody has ordered at a restaurant that has gone unclaimed, they're not trying to like sell it? Do you get it at a great discount? How long has the food been sitting at the counter? These are all questions that I would have. But if you are planning on ordering out and you don't mind eating a shrimp scampi, even though you were going to order something bolognese, these are just Italian suggestions, then maybe it's a good way to save money. So that makes sense. And so in that way, I would say that that's a pretty good invention. All right. I like it. So I do like it. I like it. We have a lot more coming up on the show. Next, I'm going to have Jack and Spike join me. We're going to talk about student loan forgiveness, like college student loan forgiveness. This is a firebrand hot topic that everybody's talking about right now. People have a lot of opinions about this. I am always surprised when somebody seems like they are okay with paying off somebody else's student loans. I am a person who in most cases, I understand if a teacher as part of their compensation package because they work for public schools has been told, we're going to pay off your student loans if you work for the public schools for like 10 years or something like that. If that's part of what they were promised when they got hired, great. I'm totally all for it. There's other people out there who have chosen to pursue ridiculous degrees like violinists. And I'm not saying all violinists, but like, let's say that somebody takes out $250,000 in student loan debt so that they can become a professional musician. That's a very difficult road to go down. That's a very difficult one to be successful at. So if they owe 250 grand, that's then forgiven. If you don't like the sound of that, you are in for a fun story next. I'm going to have Jack and Spike on. I'm going to see what they think about it. We're going to have the council where we try to get a bunch of minds together to see if we can come up with some answer. All right, stick around for that. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I wanted to have a couple guys on with me to try to get to the bottom of a topic that a lot of people are discussing. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I know what I think, but I don't know what they think about it. So we're going to talk about it with these guys. I'm going to talk right now with Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill from the Jack and Spike Show, and they're going to join me on...
Hark, adventurers of the airwaves, a gathering of voices awaits, because wow. an idiot with a plan can defeat a genius without one. Welcome to the Council.
That's awesome.
Wow. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I want to start. I don't know a ton of stuff. And so when I can have people on who might have all their other opinions mm-hmm. about things, and then collectively our brains work in a way that maybe we can, arrive at an answer. That's kind of what I'm shooting for. That, so that's kind of the counsel. That's what we talk about.
That's the smartest thing I've heard all day, man.
Yeah, man. Silly, this silly. Is brilliant.
All right. So here is a here's a story that I saw. It's in Business Insider. It's on the topic of student loan forgiveness, which, Spike, when I was on the air with you the other day, we were talking about. We were both engaged in this conversation.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be fun to do kind of a follow-up. I'm going to read, and again, this is an extreme case, but it is a case of somebody whose loans were forgiven, and I thought it would be fun to get your guys' take on this. So there's a Gen Xer. His name is Joel Lambden. He is he graduated from graduate school in 1998. He studied music. He's a violinist.
Okay.
And he had quite a lot of student loans. In fact, he had about $250,000 in student loans. What he figured out pretty quickly in short order was that as a violinist, it's tough to find gainful employment to the level at which you would need to pay down $250,000.
Agreed.
Student loans,
yeah.
Because that's a lot of money. So he said that he and his wife had to start figuring out ways to, you know, not get around this, but like, how do you have this giant debt hanging over your head and still have a life? Because now he's almost 50 years old. He's 49 years old. And so what they decided to do is they put his loan, his bigger loan, which is $249,000 and change, into something called forbearance. And what forbearance does, it allows your loan to sit there. You don't technically have to make payments on it, but interest continues to accrue so that when you then turn it back on and you start making payments on it again, then the loan would be 250 turns into 300 or whatever it turns into.
A lot of people use forbearance during the pandemic to pause their mortgage payments.
Yes.
Right.
Pause mortgage payments.
Until they get the wheels back on the cart.
Also college loans. That was a big thing in the pandemic, was they turned off college loans. So then he was wonderfully surprised when he woke up one day to an email that says that his account had been adjusted and it something that the Biden-Harris administration had done, and it was through the Aid Vantage, they forgave $249,255 of his student loans.
Yeah.
And so I was very interested in that. Obviously, that's like, essentially, it's like winning the lottery. That's
what
you would have to pay back. No longer has to be paid back. And I was interested in what you guys thought of that. Is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea for somebody like Joel in his violining?
Well, so like the thing that often happens, Jake, is media likes to focus in on these people who get a pretty much a useless degree, and they say, should this person have their loan forgiven?
Well, if you consider violinists a useless degree.
If you look at the stats, though, the majority of people who have loans that are difficult to pay back in the United States are nurses, police officers, teachers, right? So I know that people like to paint this picture of it being a liberal arts degree, which in many ways, in many cases it is. But if you actually look at the occupations of these people, you're looking at people who help the country run and function.
Well, that's so, what's interesting about that is I actually know that there are programs for people who go into the public service sector.
Yeah.
Part of their compensation package is actually, listen, if you work for us for a certain amount of time, we're going to pay off those student loans. That had fallen through some loophole where they were no longer getting that benefit.
Well,
I totally agree with them getting that benefit.
99% of the people who qualify for that weren't given those forgivenesses service. Listen, and that's one of the things that Biden-Harris's administration has done.
If you qualify for that, I am
100%. Agreed.
That's the thing. If that was promised to you as part of like the reason that you went into teaching, you said like, you know, it can be expensive to become a teacher.
Sure.
It can be expensive to, you know, become one of these other jobs. I'm all for that. But this one does highlight something that I do think is another issue. The University of Pennsylvania, they start digging into who would be qualifying for some of these loan forgiveness programs. And they found that 750,000 households would get loan forgiveness. And they make over, not 750,000 total, but 750,000 households, which will get this loan forgiveness, make over $312,000 a year. And when I look at that, I just go like, well, I understand paying some of the nurses and the teachers if that was promised to them. Now we're talking about really high earners, people who have gone to graduate school. Like 40% of people who have outstanding student loans are graduate school and probably higher earner people.
So we could use the macroeconomic argument when you're talking about student debt relief, because I think that oftentimes we get hung up on do these people deserve it, right? Or that we get hung up on the, I'm not paying for whatever it is.
It's tough to quantify what is deserved for me.
Right. So the macroeconomic argument basically breaks down like this. You've got a student debt bubble that's around about a trillion plus.
Yeah.
And you have a decent amount of those people who are just simply will never be able to pay back that loan. So if you were to offset that huge deficit in our economy and basically fill it in with federal dollars, then the tax base actually broadens because people can then go spend their money on, you know, homes, consumer goods, whatever it is. So in a, what you're basically doing is that you are using short-term money to solve a long-term problem. And when you frame it that way, people then begin to understand, oh, that makes sense, that the reason that this percentage of the population can't buy a house is because they're making $600 or $700 payments every month. In order for us to really, I think, right or correct this, two things have to happen. One, you have to eliminate that student debt. But then two, what you have to do is you have to eliminate the predatory loan schemes that a lot of these colleges have.
Which is another thing that they're trying to address, which
absolutely,
I think is a very good thing to address.
So, I mean, when you're 18, in many, you can't drink, right?
Right.
In some states, you can't even buy a gun.
Correct.
And but you most certainly can sign a loan for upwards of $50,000 a year. I mean, this is a... Well, I wish that people talked about it in a much more careful and complex way other than just, you know, the way that people choose to talk about it now.
What's interesting is, you know, I lived this experience firsthand. When I was in high school, you know, I knew I wanted to go and finish, go to college and do that stuff. My family did not have that money to pay off my student loans. They didn't have the money to just like pay for me to go to college. So I was surprised when the government said, hey, I'm going to lend you all the money here. And I thought that was great.
Sure.
I decided to go to a very expensive out-of-state school. It ended up costing a lot of money. And by the time I finished college, I had tens of thousands. I think I got like $60,000+ in student loan debt. Comparatively, by a lot of standards, that's not actually that much.
No, it's not.
Some people end up with.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I had that money that I owed. And it took about 7 years for me to pay that off. And it was a pain to pay that money off.
But right. You made real sacrifices to your building a life. Well, you didn't just pay the minimums every month and drag it out till you were 70,
well, that's
right?
The key I sat down and looked at it from a financial standpoint and said, like, if I don't want to be holding on to this, like this poor guy with his violin degree, when I'm 49 years old, then you got to figure out a way to pay it off. In this case, Jack, and I agree with you, it would be great if all this money just turned right around and went back into the economy. Joel would prove otherwise. He says that now that he doesn't have to worry about this payment anymore, he's excited to now take a sabbatical from his work to study with his meditation teacher in India. I feel like obviously he's being highlighted because he is a ridiculous.
Sure,
person.
he makes the argument against relief. Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody who sees this guy goes like, yes, no relief should be happening for this gentleman. Other people deserve it. I don't think this guy deserves it. Your thoughts?
This is a solid take.
I'd like to know what the hell a guy who makes, you know, six figures plus qualified for complete, seems like complete debt forgiveness. I didn't realize that was any capacity of this whatsoever.
If you have been paying your student loans for over 20 to 25 years.
You've been on time without missing payments, diligent repayment.
Then, and I don't know how forbearance figures into that, but if you've been paying them for more than 25 years, no matter what your income ceiling, you are eligible for full forgiveness.
See, I have no problem with that because, like Jack said, it's a predatory lending system. And I understand
we're
that.
You're talking about a doctor. You're fine with doctors.
I'm talking about the system itself. It's a predatory system where people can borrow $60,000, pay back $80,000, and still owe $80,000 more. That's a predatory lending system. I understand it needs to be that way because you're dealing with 18-year-olds. And a lot of people, you know, you can't walk away from your student loan. It's always there. Bankruptcy doesn't forgive it. I think a couple things need to happen. Like you said, Jack, the cost of education has to be looked at. That's one element of this.
So expensive.
Yeah. Also, I think if someone has paid into it, they should reevaluate that loan status, that initial loan. And say, instead of running it through the necessary predatory system of ridiculous interest rates, take the initial amount, run it through a metric that says, okay, say you borrowed it at 7%. And you would have had to pay this much back in interest and this much back in principal. Where are you at now? That's where you stand
like you
on your debt. Exactly. That it's a lot of moving parts in this that all need to be kind of tweaked to get it right.
It sounds like we probably maybe agree to disagree on this one a little bit. But that's okay. That's what the council's all about.
I think there's too much violence in our cities.
We didn't solve student loans today, but they will someday.
I hope.
All right, Jack and Spike, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Last segment, we just had a segment with Jack and Spike as part of
the council. We were discussing student loan forgiveness, which is a big issue right now. So if you missed that conversation, you can go download the podcast. It's a fun one. I don't think that Jack and Spike and I all agree. I think probably the two of them feel a little bit differently about student loan forgiveness than I do. But what I love is that even though we have different opinions on that, and even though maybe we have different life experiences that are informing those opinions, I still like those guys. So it's fun for me to be able to get on the air with them and to talk about, things that we don't all agree about, but we can still have a fun time doing it. All right, so you can download the podcast. If you missed that segment, look up Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. You can listen to it on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you get your podcast. It's great HD entertainment. I'm right in your pocket. Anytime you want me, just hit the play button. I'm right there for you. I'm your best friend. All right, now I want to play some audio from, I think this is from NYU, right? There's a protest happening at NYU. There's a big protest of students, probably a lot of people who aren't students as well, but they're protesting against Israel on NYU, which seems crazy, but they are, and they want the university to cut all contact with Israel. And this is what one of the students had to say when they were asked by somebody walking around with a camera. Somebody walked around and said, "Hey, I'm interested. Why are you here protesting?" And she says something. She and her friend, who are both there protesting against Israel and NYU, they seem a little confused as to why they're actually protesting. But they're still there, so let's hear what they have to say.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing? About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
Oh.
I came from Columbia. I was there off at Columbia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
NYU students needed our support. She came down from Columbia, where there's also protests happening. I would imagine probably the students at NYU would prefer that she understood why she was there. Dan Abrams, he's a media personality. He hosts a show on News Nation. I think he started a site called Media. I could be wrong about that, but he's a big time in the news, big time news guy. He went to Columbia. And he went to law school at Columbia. And he says, listen, all of these protests, all of these anti-Israel protests that are happening on college campuses around the country, especially the ones that he's graduated from, super embarrassing. He's ashamed of it. And this is what he had to say about his alma mater.
As a graduate of Columbia University Law School, I am ashamed, I'm embarrassed by what I'm seeing on that campus and now other campuses, right? I wholeheartedly support the arrest of the students, professors, and outside agitators preventing everyone else from attending classes, right? I'm not talking about protests. I'm talking about encampments. I'm talking about preventing people from going to class.
I think he completely nails it. I feel the exact same way. Like, I'm a parent now. Someday my kids are going to be in college, and when they're in college, just like I was, kids get crazy ideas in their head, and they might even find themselves doing something like this. I would hope not, because I would hope that my kids would understand history a little bit more and would not just throw themselves in with folks like this. But if I was a parent, I'd be very upset that the school seemed to be completely bending over backwards to make it life easier for these protesters. Columbia University shut down their campus. They said, hey, you know what we're going to do? Because there's all these agitators on campus, we're going to go ahead and shut this down. Instead of just getting them kicked off of campus, instead they're saying no more classes for everybody else. That doesn't make sense to me. I think you should still be able to go to school, even if you disagree with what somebody's saying. I think you should still provide an environment where somebody who's paying like $60,000, $70,000 a year to attend your school can still come onto campus and feel safe. I think that's what they need to do. And I think it probably starts with making sure that the students on those campuses are a little more educated about why they're there.
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.